think Mark feels I need to practice my English. And so he asked if I could share in English this evening. It's a special joy for me to be back in the Bay Area. Actually, every time I come to the Bay Area, I'm especially reminded of the Lord's work in my own life right here in the Bay Area following my studies at university. There was about 2 years' time where I actually lived in Berkeley after graduating from university. And it was really during those 2 years that God worked through a retired CIM missionary by the name of David Aidney to very much help me in my own understanding of God's will for my life and the direction that God would have me serve Him in throughout my life. And so every time I come back to the Bay Area, I'm always reminded of the fact that it was really here in the Bay Area that I received a call for full-time ministry and dedicated myself to serving the Lord. I would like to also take this time to especially thank the church for your prayerful support and partnership with us as we serve in Taiwan, as we serve in Asia. I'm only sorry that my wife is not able to be here. Somebody at the beginning of the service, when they heard that I came by myself, they sounded very disappointed. It seems that maybe it'd be better for my wife to come and I stay in Taiwan. But I'm very sorry that she is not able to be with us this evening. But I did bring a picture of our family, you will get a chance to see how much our kids have grown if you have seen other pictures. Our son is a senior in high school, and so he is in the midst of filling out college application forms. And he will be returning to the United States next summer and will begin a new phase in his life. And then we have two daughters. The middle one is Selena, and then our youngest one just became a teenager about 2 months ago. And actually right before her birthday, she came into my study and she said, "Daddy, watch out, I'm going to be a teenager." And so I'm still waiting to find out what exactly that means. But obviously she felt very excited that she was going to be a teenager. And we're not sure what we have in store or what she has in store for us in these days. This is actually a picture of my parents, my father and his family, or should say my grandparents, and a picture taken actually on 911. Most of us, when we think of 911, obviously think of the Twin Towers, but our family also had a 911. This picture was actually taken after the Second World War, and my father had just been, together with his siblings, had been just released from the Japanese concentration camp. And they had this picture taken right after that. And then obviously my great-great-grandparents, Hudson Taylor. And the reason why I want to show you these three pictures is actually there is a verse or two pictures of two families in the book of Joshua. You'll remember that the book of Joshua begins with Rahab's family becoming a family that was saved by God's grace. And yet, as we turn to the end of that chapter, there is a picture of another family, and that is the family of Joshua, and a verse that we're very familiar with there in Joshua chapter 24, where Joshua, turning to the Israelites, said to them, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And I've always been reminded of those two pictures of two different families. that God has not only saved us, but actually He has saved us to serve Him. And my prayer is that for each and every one of our families, we would not only be families that are saved, but we would also be families that are committed to serve the Lord together. Well, this evening, what I would like to do is to share a little bit about missions, especially as we think of missions in the 21st century. Now, if there was a verse that we could use as a background to what I would like to share, my mind especially went to this passage found in the Gospel of John in the 9th chapter, where there in the 4th verse, you remember that Jesus turned to His disciples and said to His disciples this: "As long as it is day, we must do the work of Him who has sent me. Night is coming when we can no longer work. As long as it is day, we must do the work of Him who has sent me. Night is coming when we can no longer work." Well, I'm sure many of you will be familiar with the background of this statement by Jesus. It actually appears in the 6th miracle recorded for us in the Gospel of John. If you've ever studied the Gospel of John, you will know that there are actually 7 miracles in the Gospel of John. And John paid special attention to these 7 miracles. And actually, at the end of the book, you remember that John said Jesus performed many other miracles, but these have been written that you might believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And by believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, you might have eternal life. And so each of these 7 miracles actually plays a very, very important role in the overall message of the Gospel of John. Well, this miracle, as we mentioned, is actually the 6th miracle in the Gospel of John. And it tells of a miracle in which Jesus healed a man that was born blind. It begins in that chapter, Jesus walking with His disciples, and as they were walking, they saw a man born blind. And you remember that the disciples asked Jesus a question: "Rabbi," that means teacher, "who sinned that this man was born blind?" Then Jesus responded to His disciples. He said, "Neither has this man sinned, nor has his parents sinned, or did his parents sin, but this has happened to him that the work of God might be manifested in his life." That the work of God might be manifested in his life. Well, if we look at that verse, the 3rd verse, "the work of God might be manifested in his life," coupled with this verse, you will actually see that this word "work," whether it be in the noun form or in the verb form, actually appears 4 times. In verse 3, Jesus says the work of God would be manifested in his life. And then in this verse, Jesus says to his disciples, "As long as it is day, we must," and the original would be "work," "we must work the work of him who has sent me. Night is coming when we can no longer work." And so this word "work" actually appears 3 times in verse 4 and 1 time in verse 3. It's a very important word. We don't have time today to look at the entire Gospel of John, but you will notice actually that this word in the Gospel of John appears actually some 35 times. Well, if we just look at this one passage, I think there are several things that I'd like to just very quickly draw our attention to. I'd like you to first of all notice that Jesus actually invites his disciples to partner together with him in this work. He invites his disciples. Remember what he said? He said, "As long as it is day, we must do the work."
He did not say, I must do the work. Of course, if he would have said, I must do the work, that would have been perfectly understandable. But that is not what Jesus says. Instead, he invites his disciples, and I believe that in the 21st century, he is also inviting you and me to partner together with him in the work. And so there's a partnership in this work. But secondly, there's also a necessity in the work. For Jesus said, as long as it is day, we must do the work. A necessity, a must-ness about this work. Actually, that word must in the Gospel of John only appears 10 times. Somebody has referred to it as the divine imperatives in the Gospel of John. Must. It's not a matter of choice, but rather it's a matter of necessity. We must do this work. Not only is it a partnership, a necessity, it is also an urgent work. And of course, this comes through in this verse. If you go back and look at it, Jesus paints several pictures of the urgency of the work. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who has sent me. Night is coming when we can no longer work. And I am personally convinced that this sense of urgency is something that the church so desperately needs to recapture in the 21st century. Hudson Taylor used to talk about the Chinese in China. 300 million Chinese in Hudson Taylor's day. But he often described them as racing to a Christless eternity. Racing to a Christless eternity. And it was that picture that created in Hudson Taylor a deep sense of urgency of mobilizing missionaries to go to the inland parts of China. Because he realized these many, many thousands, millions of Chinese were heading for a Christless eternity. And we needed to share the gospel with them as quickly as possible. And so Jesus talks about this urgency. As long as it is day, we must do the work. Night is coming when we can no longer. It's also a missional work. To do the work of him who has sent me. And I pray that each and every one of us would have a sense of mission about our lives. That there would be a purpose in our life. That there would be an eternal purpose in our life. That we would have that kind of a shimi, as we would say in Chinese. That kind of a mission and a purpose as we serve the Lord. But it was also obviously a work of salvation. And this picture of a man who was born blind, I think is a very important reminder to us that while all around us there are people who are perhaps physically able to see, yet we know that the God of this earth and this age has actually blinded their eyes so that they might not see the glory of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Yes, they might be physically able to see, but spiritually they are blind. And I believe that this picture, if you were to go back and read John chapter 9, you would very quickly see that this is actually a picture of the world and the need for salvation. To have our eyes open that we might know Jesus Christ, that we might receive his salvation, his redemption on the cross. It's also actually a work of transformation as well. And I believe that's a wonderful truth that the Christian faith gives to us. The Christian faith is not only about souls saved, it's also about lives transformed. It's not only about salvation, it is also about transformation. The power of God does not only save us, the power of God, the gospel, the power of Jesus Christ is also a transforming power in the in individuals' lives, and we so desperately need to not only experience that ourselves, but also to share with others about how Jesus Christ can come into their lives and not only save them, but also transform their lives. And just like this man who was born blind over 40 years, but when he met Jesus and he was touched by Jesus, his life was transformed. Well, very quickly, lastly, it is also a witnessing work, that the work of God might be what? Manifested in his life. And my prayer is that the work of God might also be manifested in your life and in my life today. Well, that's something of a background of what I'd like to share with us this evening. And actually, I have 7 points that I'd like to share. 7 areas as we look at missions in the 21st century. 7 particular challenges that I believe are critical for us to see, as well as to think through how we as a church, how we as individuals can be involved in what God is doing around the world. Well, the first challenge I would like to share with you is what I have entitled the Challenge of the Unreached. And if you see the Chinese, I refer to this as 为神、为德之名宣教的工作. Reaching the unreached. Maybe before looking at some specific examples, we can just very quickly highlight a graph that actually you might be familiar with. In missiology, we refer to this part of the world as the 1040 window. The 1040 window. It represents 40 longitude and 10 longitude. This 1040 window that cuts right across the northern part of Africa, right across the Middle East, and into Asia, including China. And they tell us that actually 2/3 of the world's population live in this part of the world. 2/3 of the world's population, and several major people groups are actually contained in this. And we'll come back in a minute and look at that. But maybe just very quickly, as we look at that whole area in the world, there are several things that would be important for us to realize. First of all, the Christian ratio in this part of the world is actually very, very small. It's only nearly, it's just only about 1% in totality Christian. Out of 100 people, there's actually only one Christian. So just about 1%. And therefore, we could say that the needs are tremendous. Yet it's interesting to note that even though the needs are so great, if we were to tabulate the missionary offering that is given annually for world missions, we would find that this part of the world actually only receives 2% of the total missionary offering in global missions annually. In other words, 98% of mission giving goes to other parts of the world, where actually the greatest need is, the least amount of resources are allocated. It's also obviously representative of several very large countries with very large populations. Actually, 10 of the largest countries population-wise are found in this part of the world. It's also a very poor area in the world. And they tell us that nearly 85% of the poor of the world can be found in this area. And these are some things that we need to be thinking about when we think of missions. Where is our support going? In Chinese we say, 雪中送炭还是锦上添花. Are we putting the money where actually the greatest needs are? Is there a sense of prioritizing our giving so that we're actually giving to places where the greatest need is? It's something to think about. But also, actually, to be a Christian, to become a Christian in this part of the world, more than likely will mean that you will face opposition. You will face persecution. And in fact, there are some parts in this area in the world, if you were to become a Christian, you would actually probably face even a death. You might even face your life being taken away. And so we see that actually it is a very difficult part of the world. And because of that, it has often been referred to as the belt of resistance. Sorry, we're okay. I accidentally pressed the bottom button here. It's often referred to as the belt of resistance. Well, we highlighted several people groups in that chart, and I want to just spend a couple of minutes because we have 7 points. We obviously can't spend a lot of time in each point looking at it in greater depth, but just very quickly, there are several people groups here in this area of the world that I believe are imperative when we think of missions in the 21st century. I personally believe that actually as we look at missions in the 21st century, probably the greatest challenge that the church faces is how can we effectively share the gospel of Jesus Christ with the Muslim world. This will be the greatest challenge, I believe, for the church in the 21st century. If we are to complete the Great Commission of Jesus Christ, in our generation, the church will need to focus and get far more serious about how we can reach the Muslim world with the gospel of Jesus Christ. They tell us that there are probably close to 1.5 billion Muslims around the world. 15亿回教徒 1.5 billion. That actually represents nearly a fourth of the world's population. Out of every four people, you will find one person to be a Muslim. And we need to think of ways in which we can be even more effective in reaching the Muslim world. Actually, I believe that in this area, the Western church will increasingly find it difficult to share the gospel with the Muslim world. The Western world, the Caucasian world, suffers from history dating all the way back to the Crusades. But even in contemporary history, with the Persian Wars, with the Gulf Wars, I should say, 9/11, and the antagonism that continues to take place between the Muslim world and the Caucasian world, or the Western world, I believe that in the 21st century, it will fall upon the non-Western church, including the Chinese church, to reach out to the Muslim world and to bring them to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. Actually, even in China, you will know that there is a fairly large Muslim population, including the Huiming, the Hui people. There are probably just over 10 million Hui people, the Uyghurs of northwest China, as well as the Kazakhs. And so the Muslim world is a tremendous challenge that I believe we face as we think of the unreached people groups in the world today. But not only the Muslim world, but the Buddhist world. And missiologists tell us that there are probably close to 1 billion Buddhists in the world today. That includes, actually, not only Asia, places like Japan, places like Thailand. Taiwan, where I am living, or where my family is living, is a very devout Buddhist country. But it's not only in Asia that we will find Buddhists. Actually, there are Buddhists here in America. This morning I was watching television in my hotel room, and they had a station right here in the Bay Area. A Buddhist monk was teaching about Buddhism. Actually, he was doing this in Chinese. I gathered that probably there are a lot of Buddhists even here in the Bay Area. But I believe that just as the Muslim world represents a great challenge for us, actually the Buddhist world also represents a tremendous challenge. The third area, or the third group, unreached group that I believe we need to continue to focus upon are obviously the Chinese, scattered literally across the world. Over 1.3 billion Chinese. And I think in this regard, probably the Chinese church has a unique opportunity to continue to reach out to Chinese, both near and afar, with the gospel of Jesus Christ. But there's a fourth group, very quickly, in this first area of unreached people groups, and that is the Hindu people, the people from India. Do you know that there are actually close to 700 million Hindus around the world today? 700 million. 700 million Hindus. About a year ago, I had the chance to go to Toronto. And driving in from the airport into the city, I saw right there on the side of the freeway this huge Hindu temple. And the person who picked me up from the airport told me that actually they imported all of the materials to build this Hindu temple from India. They spent literally millions of dollars importing this material in order to build this temple. I immediately thought of two things. One, there are a lot of Hindus in Toronto, or else they wouldn't need to build such a huge Hindu temple. There must be a lot of Hindus in Toronto. But I immediately also thought of a second thing, and that is this. We don't actually have to go to India to share the gospel with Hindus. Actually, the Lord, if I might say so, the Lord has brought the Hindus to Canada, to Toronto. Now, if God is calling somebody to India, obviously they need to go. But as we look at missions today, and we will talk about this a little bit further this evening, but when we look at missions today, it is very obvious that God has also brought many, many different people groups to our doorstep. And while if God is calling us to go to other places, we need to go, yet we need to realize that God at the same time has brought those people to our very doorstep. And we have an opportunity to share the gospel with them even while we are still in our own home countries. And so in Canada, they don't have to go halfway around the world to reach out to the Hindus. God has brought the Hindus to Canada. Well, thinking of that, I was reminded of a very sad commentary on the state of Christianity in the West. Do you know that every day in America, 7,000 people leave the church? Every day in America, 7,000 people leave the church for a variety of reasons. Maybe just to set that in context, do you know how many people every day in Africa join the church? Missiologists tell us that every day in Africa, 50,000 people join the church. So if we were to go to Africa, we would see a church that is growing at astronomical pace. And yet at the same time, here in America, we are very much aware that especially the Caucasian church is facing perilous times. 7,000 people a day leaving the church. And so many churches are empty. Not only here in America, but if you were to go to the United Kingdom, to the UK, if we were to go to Germany, to other parts of Europe. Do you know that actually many churches have been sold to Muslims who have converted them to Muslim mosques in Europe? Well, here in England, there was a church actually originally dedicated to William Carey, the first missionary to India. And yet, that church, because of the fact that no one was left in the church, they had to sell the church. Who did they sell it to? Or I should say, who bought it? The Indians bought it. And I'm talking not about Native Americans, but people from India. And that church, a memorial to the first missionary to India, William Carey, is actually today a Hindu temple. A Hindu temple. Well, we are faced with the first challenge, and that is the need to continue to take the gospel to the other ends of the world. The challenge of the unreached. The second challenge, as we look at missions in the 21st century, is the challenge of cans. And I've entitled this Zhishin. If you remember, the first one was Weishin. We'll have a little exam at the end, so you'll need to remember these, especially the Chinese. It's very easy to remember. Of course, it's probably easy to forget as well. But I will especially test the Chinese in our group to make sure that you stay awake as I'm trying to speak in English. And none of you should fall asleep. I don't think any of you got up at 3 o'clock this morning, which I got up at 3 o'clock this morning, and I didn't have a nap this afternoon. So it's a good thing I'm speaking, not listening, because if I was listening, I for sure would fall asleep. But you have no excuse for falling asleep because you probably had a full night's sleep last night. But the second challenge we want to look at is can missiology. Well, what do we mean by can missions? Well, there are several other names that sometimes we will refer to them, this kind of work as. For instance, we might talk about bivocational workers. People who are taking two vocations, two jobs into the mission field. They might be doctors, they might be nurses, they might be teachers, they might even be in business. And they are using that platform as a means of going to places where missionaries are unable to go openly and freely. They are using a variety of professional platforms to go and live and work, as well as to be a witness and to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Some people refer to it as tent makers. And obviously, if you're familiar with the New Testament, you will know that this is the term that was used during Peter's time in Corinth in Acts chapter 18. You remember that he was with Aquila and Priscilla. And together they were tent makers. And for a period of time, they made tents as a way of supporting themselves. Well, it's important for us to realize, as we think of this challenge, to know that even those places are not open to missionaries, even though they are not open to missionaries, yet we want to quickly say that they are not actually closed. Yes, they are not open to missionaries, but they are not closed to Christians. And by means of creativity, you are actually able to go to these places to be a witness for Jesus Christ. Could I just share a testimony with you very quickly about creativity when it comes to this? Several years ago, I was invited to speak at a mission conference in Manila in the Philippines. This was a very interesting mission conference because it was set up as a mission conference with a special focus upon Filipinos who were being sent out of the Philippines to work in different parts of Asia as well as the Middle East. They are referred to as overseas contract workers, OCWs, overseas contract workers. And I remember speaking at this mission conference, and it was Friday night, Saturday night, and then Sunday night. And at the conclusion of the service at Sunday night, a sister, probably only in her early 20s, came to talk to me. She said, "Pastor Taylor, would you pray for me?" I said, "How can I pray for you?" She says, "I am actually going to work in Saudi Arabia." She said, "You will never be able to go where I am going." I said, "Well, where are you going?" She says, "I'm going to be a maid, a domestic helper in a Muslim home." She said, "Pastor Taylor, you will never be able to get into a Muslim home. You might be able to get to Saudi Arabia. You couldn't stay long because you could only be a tourist. I have a work visa. And I am going to be living in a Muslim home. Would you please pray that the Lord would enable me to be a good witness for Jesus Christ in the home of this Muslim family?" Well, I don't think we probably think that domestic helpers are missionaries. That certainly probably doesn't come to mind very quickly in your mind, and certainly not even in my mind. But that evening, her testimony opened up my eyes to realize that actually there are many, many ways that you and I can be used by God in areas where traditional missionaries will find it very, very difficult to go and serve. Well, if we were to look at the world today, even just to look at Asia, you would find that actually nearly 80% of Asia lives in what we call Can regions. It comes out to be about 1.7 billion people. 17亿人. 1.7 billion people live in areas in Asia alone where missionaries, traditional missionaries, cannot go, but Christians are able to go. Well, if you were to look at a map, and let's just very quickly look at this map. I'm sorry the colors are a little bit funny, but when we talk about open access countries, this would be the green, the light green, and this is where missionaries are able to go freely to serve. And so a place like Thailand, actually even Cambodia, the Philippines, Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, Mongolia, actually Hong Kong and Macau are what we would call open access countries. There are also countries that are limited in access, and we're primarily looking at Indonesia as a limited access nation. That is, there are some opportunities for Christians, missionaries, to get a visa. For instance, in Indonesia, you can actually get a theological lecturer visa to go and teach in a seminary in Indonesia. And so there's a degree of openness in Indonesia. But when we're talking about creative access, the 1.7 billion people that we talked about, it is this group of countries and regions that actually include Malaysia, it includes Brunei, it includes Myanmar, it includes Laos, Laowoo, 或者辽国, it includes Vietnam, and certainly China, and actually we could also include North Korea in this whole area. And let me tell you that even though those places are not open to missionaries, from the experience that I have had traveling in much of this part of the world, I have seen actually open doors, numerous open doors for Christians to use their professions to go into these places and be a witness, an effective witness for Jesus Christ. Let me just share some possibilities that I have been involved in. For instance, medical work. I don't know if we have anyone in our midst this evening who is a medical practitioner. Maybe a doctor, maybe a nurse, or another type of medical practitioner. But I would want to say to you today that as we look at CAN missions, one of the wonderful opportunities is actually for medical professionals to use medicine as a means of going into these places and being a witness for Jesus Christ. Education, another opportunity. I've often struggled about showing this picture, especially using a foreigner in this picture, because probably for most of us, we would quickly think, well, when we talk about education, we're talking about teaching English. And certainly that is a wonderful opportunity. But I want you to know that actually teaching Putonghua, Mandarin Chinese, is also a growing opportunity literally across the world. I was in Indonesia not too long ago. And while in Jakarta, the capital, I visited a Mandarin language center in the heart of Jakarta, actually established by the Wenzhou Church in China. Why would they set up a Mandarin language center in Jakarta? Because they knew that Indonesians want to learn Chinese. And so they sent up a center to teach Mandarin Chinese to Indonesians. Do you know what one of their textbooks is? Does anyone want to guess? One of their textbooks is a Hanyu Pinyin Bible. They shared with me that many American churches who have a burden for international students actually have used the English Bible as one of their textbooks. Even here in America, I know of many Caucasian churches, American churches, who have an outreach to international students. And as they share American culture, as they share in terms of English teaching with these international students, they use the American Bible or the English Bible as one of their textbooks. And I thought, what a brilliant idea. Why is it that only Americans can use the Bible to teach English, and why can't we Chinese use the Hanyu Bible to teach Chinese? And so when we talk about education, please do not just think we're talking about teaching English, although that is a wonderful opportunity. Many Chinese churches in North America have a 中文学校. But I've noticed that not one of their 中文学校 has an outreach vision beyond 教我们的第二代讲中文. Now, don't misunderstand me. 我们要我们的第二代可以说中文. We want our children to be able to speak Chinese. But why is it that our vision is only for them? There are many Caucasians who would like to learn Chinese, especially in the 21st century, where Chinese and China is such has such prominence internationally. And I think the Chinese church needs to awaken to a wonderful opportunity that we can actually use our language as a means of sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. Incidentally, if you need a Hanyu Pinyin Bible, I'm happy to help you get a hold of some if you would like to start a Chinese school. Not to teach our second generation Chinese only, but also to have outreach among other people. And there might be Caucasians. There might even be Muslims in our neighborhoods who would like to learn Chinese. Well, why can't we have a Chinese class? Teach them Chinese. And of course, one of our textbooks needs to be the Hanyu Pinyin Bible. And allow God's work in their lives. Well, education, a wonderful opportunity. Youth work.
This is a picture taken of some of our work in the southern part of Sichuan in China. And this particular individual here is actually a Brazilian soccer coach who came and is a part of our work in Sichuan, especially in the mountains of southern Sichuan among the Yi people. I still remember him sharing of he never realized that playing soccer and missions can come together. He never realized that his profession could be used on the mission field in a Can mission area. And the local officials, of course, were very excited that a Brazilian coach was coaching their team. They said the 国家队都请不到巴西的足球教练. The national team couldn't even hire a Brazilian coach, and 我们这种小地方都有巴西的教练来教我们踢足球. So they were very excited. Wonderful opportunity of just using one's profession as a way of sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. Community service. I especially love this picture. The brother in the blue here is actually our colleague. There are three local people together. They are drilling a well to get clean water so that the people can drink clean water. Actually, this picture was taken the third day that they were trying to drill for water. The first 2 days they were unsuccessful. Then on the third day, actually before they started drilling, these local colleagues said to our colleague, they know we're Christians, they said, "Yeah, you're a Christian. Why don't you pray to your God and ask Him to help us hit water, to be able to successfully drill for water?" And so here are these local people, not Christians, asking our colleague, who was a Christian, to pray. "Well, okay, if you ask me to pray, I'll pray." And so he prayed. Do you know that actually in less than 10 minutes after praying, they hit water. They hit water. Originally, our colleague was very excited. He was just about ready to tell them, "Look, don't you see? My God is a God who hears our prayers." He was just about to say that, but before the words came out of his mouth, one of these local workers turned to him and said, "Why didn't you pray the first day?" But it's a wonderful opportunity of using ministry and service to people at a very practical, daily level, and be able to share the love of God with people. The concern that we have for areas in their life that are so important, yet so very basic. Wonderful opportunities of sharing. Of course, when you think of Can, we don't have time this evening, but I would encourage you to go back and look at the example of Joseph as well as Daniel in the Old Testament. Two wonderful examples of people who use their profession as a means of witnessing. And so I think the challenge as we think of this is, how can we use our professions as a profession of faith? And how can we move from world success to eternal significance? So often what we strive after is world success. And maybe there is nothing wrong in and of itself with that. But I pray that our ambition is not just merely for world success, but rather it is for eternal significance. And so the second challenge, the challenge of Can missiology. The third challenge, the challenge of urbanization. 城市宣教, urban ministry. Maybe before looking at this, I can very quickly step back and just paint a broader picture, because urbanization is very much a part of what we would call globalization today. We live in a globalized world. Well, what do we mean when we say globalization? Actually, we mean four things. First of all,
the economy of the world is linked together. Now, before you think I am advertising for Coca-Cola, please take note that that does not say Coca-Cola. Rather, it says capitalism. The economies of the world are linked together because of globalization. And so what happens in the New York stock market will affect Germany. What happens in the Nikkei in Japan, the stock market of Japan, will affect Europe. And so all of this is linked together. And that is a part of globalization, migration. And we'll come back to that in just a moment. The movements of people. Very much a part of globalization. Transportation is also a part of globalization. And then information technology. Those are the four things. When you think of globalization, just remember those four areas and you can explain globalization to anybody then. It includes those four things. Maybe just very quickly, transportation. Because I think this affects missions in a very real way. Do you know that actually to get anywhere in the world, it probably will only take you somewhere in the vicinity of 24 to 30 hours to get anywhere in the world? And you could just pause for a moment and realize that when Hudson Taylor went to China in 1853, it took him 6 months to go from Liverpool, England, to Wusong Harbor in Shanghai. 6 months. If you were to fly from Heathrow to Beijing today, you could do it actually within about 13 hours. 12 hours, 13 hours. In other words, what we're saying is, what took Hudson Taylor 1 year to do, that is to go from England to China and back, what took him 1 year to do, you and I can do in 1 day. You and I can do in 1 day. So no wonder, back in Hudson Taylor's day, there was no talk of short-term missions. Just to go there and to get back took a year. Do you know that actually a year today is long-term missions? No talk about short-term missions. But it has a tremendous impact on opportunities for short-term and long-term work. And I think the missionaries of Hudson Taylor's day will look upon this age with a great deal of envy. 很羡慕我们。 But I think they will also rebuke this generation. 也会责备我们。 那么容易, 还不赶快去。 So convenient. Why aren't we doing more? Well, let's just look very quickly at urbanization, very quickly. This was a phrase I learned not too long ago when I was traveling in China. Somebody asked me, Pastor Taylor, do you know what 386199 Brigade is? 386199部队. Of course, I had no idea what it was. And they explained to me, 38 is China's Women's Day. 妇女节. 6161 is Children's Day in China. And 99 is 重阳节, Elderly's Day in China. Well, what does that mean? 386199 Brigade. Well, what they explained to me is everything that is left in the countryside in China is 386199. 386199. In other words, all that is left in the countryside of China because of urbanization are women, are children, as well as the elderly. Urbanization, very much a part of what is going on in China. Well, because of time, we don't have a lot of extra time to talk about this. Let me just show you some slides, and you can see them very quickly to see the pace that urbanization is taking place literally around the world today. In 1950, there was only one mega city. Incidentally, do you know how large a mega city is? How big of the population of a city? How big does the population need to be before it's classified as a mega city? Does anyone know? 10 million. Okay, so in 1950, there was only one city that had over 10 million people. But actually now there are over 26 cities around the world that have a population of over 10 million. And we're not talking about the greater Shanghai area. We're talking about just Shanghai 市. Or Chongqing 市. We're not talking about the Chongqing 直辖, the huge district that we're not talking about. We're just talking about that city by itself. 26 over 10,000. 10 million, sorry. Well, some statistics that will show you the speed that is taking place in terms of urbanization. London, it took over 100 years for it to go from 1 million population to 800 million population. But Bangkok only took 45 years. And actually Seoul only took 25 years. Well, China's urbanization is something that we're very familiar with as well. And here are some statistics that will show you the speed of urbanization as it is taking place in China. And they tell us by 2020, China will be 60% urbanized. In other words, out of every 10 people, 6 will be living in the cities. Tremendous challenge that the Chinese government is facing, both nationally as well as locally. Tremendous challenge to society. How to absorb so many people. And some of the challenges. And I think the church needs to think afresh of how do we do urban ministry in a world that is very much being urbanized at amazing paces. Actually, China, they tell us that there are over 300 million migrant workers from the countryside going into the cities. That is actually close to the population of the United States. 300 million migrant workers flowing into the cities. And so a tremendous challenge of urban ministry. Well, coupled with that migration, also the challenge of diaspora work, or what I have called 侨宣, 侨民宣教, reaching nationals that are scattered around the world. And these statistics, we won't read through them, but you can look at them very quickly. You will come to see that, hey, if I want to reach the Japanese, I don't have to just go to Japan before I can reach the Japanese. Many of these countries, there are Japanese. And so Christians and churches in these countries have an opportunity to reach out to the Japanese right around them. Let me just give you some examples of this. Several years ago, I went to the city of Hamburg in Germany, the third largest harbor city in all of Europe. And the first night, I stayed with a German couple, and they shared their testimony with me. They said for the longest time, their desire was to go to Japan to be involved in evangelism among the Japanese. And they applied to several organizations, but each organization that they applied to, for a variety of reasons, turned them down. And they were very discouraged. And then one day in the morning, they were looking at the newspaper, and they suddenly learned that there were literally thousands of Japanese in Hamburg, Germany. And after doing a little more study, they realized how they could start getting in touch with these Japanese. And they began to build friendships with them. They actually taught them German. They taught them about German culture. And as friendships began to develop, they began to share the gospel with these Japanese. And lo and behold, by God's grace, individual Japanese started turning to the Lord. And so they started a fellowship, a Bible study. And as that grew in number, they felt God leading them to actually start a Japanese church in Hamburg. And if you and I went to Japan today, sorry, we went to Hamburg today, we would find a Japanese church of about 200 people. Do you know that you would actually find it very difficult to find a Japanese church in Japan with 200 people? Most Japanese churches in Japan probably only have 20, at most 30 people in it. And this German couple said something to me that I will never forget. They said, "Pastor Taylor, do you know that it's actually easier to see a Japanese come to Christ outside of Japan than it is to see a Japanese come to Christ inside of Japan?" Did you hear what I said? It is easier to lead a Japanese to Christ outside of Japan than it is to lead a Japanese to Christ inside of Japan. Do you know how many Japanese there are in the Bay Area? I don't know. But maybe that's something we can study and research. If God is calling us to the Japanese, He might be calling us to Japan and the Japanese there, but He might be calling us to reach out to the Japanese right here in the Bay Area. It is easier to see a Japanese come to Christ outside of Japan than inside of Japan. You'll know that Malaysia is actually a Muslim country. You will also know that it is illegal to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with a Malay. You will know that Bangladesh is also a Muslim country. But do you know something? When a Bangladesh laborer goes to Malaysia, it is actually legal to share the gospel with him. And I know of two Chinese churches in KL, in Kuala Lumpur, in Malaysia, who have seen a wonderful ministry, a door of opportunity of sharing the gospel with Bangladesh construction workers. Muslims who have gone to Malaysia, a Muslim country, to work. And many of those Bangladesh Muslims have come to the Lord. You could never do it in Bangladesh. But God has brought Bangladesh to Malaysia, to our very doorstep. Well, another example, PRCers, people from China in Africa. Well over 1 million Chinese in Africa today, desperately needing to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. A Kenya pastor told us, he said, "Can Chinese Christians please come to Kenya to help us reach the Chinese in Kenya?" He said, "I would rather see them receive the blessing of the gospel. I would rather see them receive the blessing of the gospel than to receive the curse of AIDS." He said, "I don't know how to speak Chinese. I don't know the Chinese culture. I don't know the Chinese worldview. Can you please send Chinese to Kenya to help us reach the Chinese in Kenya?" Diaspora ministry. Muslims in New Zealand. I was in Auckland last year. And just walking down the streets of Auckland, literally tens, hundreds of Muslims. We don't have to go to the Middle East. God has brought the Middle East to us. Taiwanese in China. Every year I have a chance to go to China to speak at several Taiwanese fellowships. And every time I go, we have baptisms. And you know, they tell me as I'm baptizing them and as I hear their testimony, they said, "If I was to stay in Taiwan, there would be no way I would believe in Jesus. They speak to me in Taiwanese. They say, 我那是老在台湾，我是绝对不信耶稣。If I was to stay in Taiwan, there is absolutely no way I would become a Christian.
上帝带我来大陆信耶稣。
God has brought me to China so that I might believe in Jesus. People groups here in the United States. The challenge of diaspora work. The fifth challenge. The challenge of holistic ministry. And just very quickly, I realize my time is over and I apologize for this. Let me just share very quickly, and we've actually highlighted the fact that the gospel of Jesus Christ is not only about the salvation of souls, but also the transformation of life. Just incidentally, I love this picture. You know what this picture is of? Does anyone remember? It's where Jesus spoke to the Samaritan woman in John chapter 4. And there's a wonderful verse in that chapter. You remember that Jesus had finished talking to this woman. Then you remember this woman went into the city and invited the Samaritans to come out and meet Jesus. Remember that? But I wonder if you've ever noticed at verse 28, before that woman left and went into the city, she did something. I wonder if you've ever noticed what she did. John tells us that that woman left her water bucket by the well. 把水罐子留下。You know, I read that passage over and over again, never realizing, never stopping to ask myself, what did that water bucket mean to that woman? I went and looked at some commentators, and some of the commentaries said that, well, she realized Jesus had talked a lot, so he must be very thirsty, and so she left the water bucket so that he would draw water. Another commentator said, well, she was so busy wanting to go back. She was so busy wanting to go back to the city that she forgot the water bucket. 应该就这样。应该就一个。Sorry. 可以了。We're okay? Nope, something happened. Sorry. There, I ruined your PowerPoint. I might have put the battery in the wrong way. You might want to see that. Sorry about that. Another commentary said that she was in such a hurry that she left the water bucket accidentally by the well. But I'm convinced that she actually left that water bucket by the well as a means of communicating how her life was changed. Thank you very much. How her life was changed when she met Jesus. That water bucket represented burdens in her life. It represented failures in her life. It represented pain and suffering and disappointment. And you remember how many times she was married? 5 times. And all the pain and the disappointment and the frustration that must have been with each marriage. That was what that water bucket represented for that woman. And yet when she met Jesus, her life was transformed. And so this is the gospel that we need to tell people about. Not only of souls saved, but also of lives changed. And there's much that we can talk about here. Recovery ministry, alcohol, recovery from drugs, from gambling. Care, for instance, for single parents. Being involved in outreach into hospitals. People who are suffering from cancer. Other social services. Poverty. Reaching the poor. Are there poor in the Bay Area? Are there homeless in the Bay Area? We're not too sure, are we?
We sort of live in our own very safe environments. But we need to find out. And is there a way that we as a church can be involved in outreach? Marginalized people, social justice, even environmental issues. The gospel of Jesus Christ is a holistic gospel. It's not only about souls needing to be saved. It's also about lives needing to be transformed. Well, we've been together a little more than an hour. But can I just tell you that actually, in the last hour, over 1,625 children have been forced, around the world, have been forced to live on the street. Homeless children. Over 1,600 children have died because of either malnutrition or other kind of diseases. Over 100 children have been sold into child prostitution, human trafficking. Over 257 children have been orphaned because their parents either had HIV or had AIDS. What am I trying to say? I believe that it is high time that the church awakens to sharing a holistic gospel with a world that desperately needs to experience, to witness the transforming power of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The sixth challenge, long-term missions. Well, I mentioned in Hudson Taylor's day, there was no such thing as short-term missions. Nowadays, it seems like there's not much talked about when it comes to long-term missions. Much is being done in short-term missions. Every year, 3 to 4 million people, just in North America alone, are involved in short-term missions. And that is okay. I believe that there is a very legitimate role that short-term missions can play in global missions today. But I think I would quickly say that we need to have a strategy, a long-term strategy, even for our short-term work. Just a few days ago, I was in the Midwest in America. And a church was sharing with me of their short-term work, mission work. And as they were sharing, I quickly realized that every year they went to a different place. This year they went here. The next year they went there. Every year for about 6 years running, they went to a different place every year. And after they finished sharing, I challenged them. I said, how do you know what you did there this 1 year? How do you know how effective it was? How do you know if that the people in that place encountered some difficulties, challenges, because you did not go back the second year? So there is no way that you could follow up on any work that you did. And I encouraged them not to go to a different place every year, but instead to go back to the same place over and over again. Build relationships in those places. Sustained mission work, just in one place alone, rather than skipping around. Well, long-term missions, so important in missions today, especially in the belt of resistance. You can't do short-term missions in Muslim areas. At least I think it is very difficult. We need to build friendships there. We need to learn the language. We need to build trust. So I believe in the 21st century, a challenge that we face is how to see long-term missions developed within our church's mission strategy. Well, the last challenge, and then we will close, is the challenge of cross-cultural missions. Question. Maybe I can just use a story as an illustration.
In 1888, Hudson Taylor wrote an article that was published in the China Millions, the periodical of the China Inland Mission. The title of his article was "To Every Creature." When this article appeared, it had a tremendous impact in the Christian church. And Hudson Taylor was invited to Norway as a result of this article to share about the needs of China. And so he went to Norway. And as a result of his sharing about the needs of China, Norwegian churches got together and they started a number of mission organizations, Norwegian mission organizations, to send missionaries to China. Well, 2 years ago, my wife and I were invited to go to Norway, Oslo, to attend the 120th anniversary of one of these mission agencies. The 120th anniversary. We had a wonderful time there. But probably the one picture that we will never forget is the picture of this mission organization's missionaries whom they sent to China. When we went into their office building, into their office, right against the wall was this picture that you see in the overhead. It was a picture of every missionary that this mission agency sent to China, to Henan and to Hubei province. In total, there was 242 missionaries. 242 missionaries. We actually met one of them while we were there. She was nearly 100 years old. You know, as we saw these 242 missionaries, my wife and I, our hearts were deeply moved. 242 individuals left their homeland. They said goodbye to their families. They said goodbye to their friends. And they traveled to China so that we Chinese might hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. They came to China and they had to learn a new language. And Chinese is not an easy language to learn. But so that we Chinese can hear the gospel of Jesus Christ in our own language, they learned Chinese. They learned how to eat with chopsticks, not very easy either. They took off their Western clothes and they put on their Chinese clothes. They lived among us Chinese. They spent their lives in China, cross-culturally, so that we might hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. While I was there, I kept on asking them, "Do you have any biographies of any of these missionaries?" And they said, "We do have some, but they're all in Norwegian." Kamputo. But you know, as we saw this picture, the question that I had in my mind is, how many of them died in China? How many of them paid that ultimate sacrifice, laying down their lives, so that we Chinese might hear the gospel of Jesus Christ? We were in Norway just about 4 days. You know, Norway is actually a very small country. Only about 6 million population. 6 million. Do you know, out of that 6 million, just about the size of Singapore, incidentally, population-wise, do you know, out of that 6 million, less than 2% are church-going, spiritually growing Christians? Less than 2%. When we saw this picture, the question that Mimi, my wife, and I had was, when would the Chinese church
send missionaries to Norway. Not to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with the Chinese in Norway, although certainly we can do that. But when would the Chinese church send missionaries to Norway to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with the Norwegians? I don't know if that's what Paul means by the debt of the gospel. But I believe we Chinese owe a debt of the gospel. And I often said that in the 21st century, 我们华人教会在跨宣上面不可以再缺席。 The Chinese church is very good at sharing the gospel with Chinese. And do not get me wrong, we need to continue to do that. But I believe that if that is the only thing we do, we have received the grace of God through these missionaries in vain. And I believe that the Chinese church needs to awaken in the 21st century to cross-cultural missions, that we might return, repay the debt of the gospel. Well, seven challenges. Do you remember what the first one was in Chinese? Wei Xun. Zhi Xun. Cheng Xun. Qiao Xun. Chen Xun. 有一些人在偷看。 Chang Xun. Kua Xun. Can I just leave one last thought together with you? I have shared a lot this evening, but I want you to know that you can't do everything. You can't do everything. But we must do something. We can't do everything, but we must do something. As long as it is day, we must do the work of Him who has sent me. Night is coming when we can no longer work. Missional challenges of the 21st century. Let's bow our heads with a word of prayer. Father, thank you for this evening, for this chance of sharing just a little bit, Father, of the challenges of missions that you have opened my eyes to. Thank you for the chance of sharing this with the church here. And Lord, I pray that it won't be just a lot of information. Maybe even some interesting stories. But Lord, that instead you would stir our hearts afresh this evening. Lord, you do not call upon us to do everything. But Lord, you do call upon us to do something. And so, Lord, I pray that you would help our church. You would increase our mission vision. Lord, you would also increase our mission participation. Lord, whether it is going or staying, you would help us to be proclaimers of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We thank you for this evening. Pray for your blessings upon each one here. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.